This text was prepared by Donald Leinson, charlieadirect.com. The Wolves and the Lamb, by William Macapus Thackeray, Dramatis Personae. Mr. Horace Millican, a widower, a wealthy city merchant. George Millican, a child, his son. Captain Touchett, his friend. Clarence Kickleberry, brother to Millican's late wife. John Howell, M's butler and confidential servant. Charles Page, footboy. Bulkley, Lady Kickleberry's servant. Mr. Bonington, coachman, cabman, a bluecoat boy, another boy, Mrs. Pryor's sons. Lady Kickleberry, mother-in-law to Millican. Mrs. Bonington, Millican's mother, married again. Mrs. Pryor. Miss Pryor, her daughter, governess to Millican's children. Arabella Millican, a child. Mary Barlow, schoolroom maid. A grown-up girl and child of Mrs. Pryor's, Lady K's maid, cook. The Wolves and the Lamb. Act I, scene. Millican's villa at Richmond. Two drawing rooms opening into one another. The late Mrs. Millican's portrait over the mantelpiece. Bookcases, writing tables, piano, newspapers, a handsomely furnished saloon. The back room opens, with very large windows, on the lawn and pleasure ground, gate, and wall over which the heads of a cab and a carriage are seen, as persons arrive. Fruit, and a ladder on the walls. A door to the dining room, another to the sleeping apartments, and see, John. Everybody out. Governor in the city. Governess, hey-ho. Walking in the park with the children. Ladyship gone out in the carriage. Let's sit down, and have a look at the papers. Buttons fetch the Morning Post out of Lady Kickleberry's room. Where's the Daily News, sir? Page. Think it's in Millican's room. John. Millican. You scoundrel. What do you mean by Millican? Speak of your employer as your governor if you like, but not as simple Millican. Confound your impudence. You will be calling me Howell next. Page. Well, I didn't know. You call him Millican. John. Because I know him, because I'm intimate with him, because there's not a secret he has but I may have it for the asking, because the letter's addressed to Horace Millican Esquire, might as well be addressed John Howell Esquire, for I read 'em, I put 'em away and docket 'em, and remember 'em. I know his affairs better than he does. His income to a shilling, pay his tradesmen, wear his coats if I like. I may call Mr. Millican what I please, but not you, you little scamp of a clod-hopping plowboy. Know your station, and do your business, or you don't wear them buttons long, I promise you. Exit Page. Let me go on with the paper reads. How brilliant this writing is. Times, Chronicle, Daily News, they're all good, blessed if they ain't. How much better the 9 liters in them 3 daily papers is than 9 speeches in the House of Commons. Take a very best speech in the House now, and compare it with an article in the Times. I say, the newspaper has the best of it for philosophy, for wit, novelty, good sense too. And the party that writes the leading article is nobody, and the chap that speaks in the House of Commons is a hero. Lord, Lord, how the world is humbugged. Popular representation. What is popular representation? Dammy, it's a farce. Hallo. This article is stole. I remember a passage in Montesquieu uncommonly like it. Goes and gets the book. As he is standing upon sofa to get it, and sitting down to read it, Miss Pryor and the children have come in at the garden. Children pass across stage. Miss Pryor enters by open window, bringing flowers into the room. John. It is like it. He slaps the book, and seeing Miss Pryor who enters, then jumps up from sofa, saying very respectfully, John. I beg your pardon, Miss. Miss P. sarcastically. Do I disturb you, Howell? John. Disturb. I have no right to say a servant has no right to be disturbed. But I hope I may be pardoned for venturing, To look at a volume in the library, miss. Just in reference to a newspaper article, that's all, miss. Miss P. You are very fortunate in finding anything to interest you in the paper, I'm sure. John. Perhaps, miss, you are not accustomed to political discussion, and ignorant of I beg your pardon. A servant, I know, has no right to speak. Exit into dining room, making a low bow. Miss Pryor. The coolness of some people is really quite extraordinary. The airs they give themselves, the way in which they answer one, the books they read. Montesquieu : Esprit de Lois. Takes book up which Jay has left on sofa. I believe the man has actually taken this from the shelf. I am sure Mr. Millican, or her ladyship, never would. The other day Elvishus was found in Mr. Howell's pantry, forsooth. It is wonderful how he picked up French whilst we were abroad. Sprit de Lois. What is it? It must be dreadfully stupid. And as for reading Elvishus, who, I suppose, was a Roman general, I really can't understand how dear, what airs these persons give themselves. What will come next? A footman, I beg Mr. Howell's pardon, a butler and confidential valet lolls on the drawing room sofa and reads Montesquieu. Impudence. And add to this, he follows me for the last 2 or 3 months with eyes that are quite horrid. What can the creature mean? But I forgot I am only a governess. A governess is not a lady, a governess is but a servant. A governess is to work and walk all day with the children, dine in the schoolroom, and come to the drawing room to play the man of the house to sleep. A governess is a domestic, only her place is not the servant's hall, and she is paid not quite so well as the butler who serves her her glass of wine. Odious. George. Arabella. There are those little wretches quarreling again. Exit. Children are heard calling out, and seen quarreling in garden. John, re-entering, see where she moves. Graces in all her steps. Even in her eye know a heaven in her eye, in every gesture dignity and love. Ah, I wish I could say it. I wish you may procure it, poor fool. She passes by me, she trr amples on me. Here's the chair she sets in, kisses it. Here's the piano she plays on. Pretty keys, them fingers out ivories you. When she plays on it, I stand and listen at the drawing room door, and my heart thr ops in time. Fool, fool, fool. Why did you look on her, John Howell? Why did you beat for her, busy heart? You were tranquil till you knew her. I thought I could have been a happy with Mary till then. That girl's affection soothed me. Her conversation didn't amuse me much. Her ideas ain't exactly elevated, but they are just and proper. Her attentions pleased me. She ever kept the best cup of tea for me. She crisped my buttered toast, or mixed my quiet tumbler for me, as I sat of evenings, and read my newspaper in the kitchen. She respected the sanctity of my pantry. When I was a-studying there, she never interrupted me. She darned my stockings for me, she starched and folded my chokers, and she sewed on the absent buttons, of which time and chance had bereft my linen. She has a good heart, Mary has. I know she'd get up and black the boots for me of the coldest winter mornings. She did when we was in humbler life, she did. Enter Mary. You have a good heart, Mary. Mary. Have I, dear John? Sadly. John. Yes, child, yes. I think a better never beat in woman's bosom. You're good to everybody, good to your parents whom you sent half your wages to. Good to your employers whom you never robbed of a halfpenny. Mary, whimpering. Yes, I did, John. I took the jelly when you were in bed with the influenza, and brought you the pork wine negus. John. Port, not pork, child. Pork is the animal which Jews abhor. Port is from Oporto in Portugal. Mary, still crying. Yes, John, you know everything, amist, John. John. And you, poor child, but little. It's not heart you want, you little trump. It's education, Mary. It's information. It's head, head, head. You can't learn. You never can learn. Your ideas ain't no good. You never can enter Shenzhen with mine. Conversation between us is impossible. It's not your fault. Some people are born clever. Some are born tall. I ain't tall. Mary. Oh. You're big enough for me, John. Offers to take his hand. John. Let go my and my a hand, Mary. I say, some people are born with brains, and some with big figures. Look at that great ass, bulky, Lady K apostrophe S man, the besotted stupid beast. He's as big as a lifeguardsman, but he ain't no more education, nor a deer's than the ox he feeds on. Mary. Law, John, whatever do you mean? John. H.M. You know not, little one. You never can know. Have you ever felt the pangs of imprisoned genius? Have you ever felt what 'tis to be a slave? Mary. Not in a free country, I should hope. John Howell knows such a thing. A place is a place, and I know mine, and am content with the sphere of life in which it pleases heaven to place me, John. And I wish you were, and remembered what we learned from our parson, when we went to school together in dear old Piggyonkit. John, when you used to help little Mary with her lessons, John, and fought Bob Brown, the big butcher's boy, because he was rude to me, John, and he gave you that black eye. John. Say I, Mary, not hey it gently, Mary. I, and I thought you never looked better in all your life than you did then. And we both took service at Squire Milliken's, me as dairy girl, and you as knife boy, and good masters have they been to us from our youth up. Both old Squire Milliken and Mr. Charles as is master now, and poor Mrs. as is dead, though as he had her tantrums, and I thought we should save up, and take the Milliken arms, and now we have saved up, and now, oh, you are a stone. And I wish you were hung round my neck, and I were put down the well. There's the upstairs bell.
She starts, changing her manner as she hears the bell, and exit.
John, looking after her, it's all true. Gospel true. We were children in the same village, sat on the same form at school. And it was for her sake that Bob Brown the butcher's boy whopped me. A black eye. I'm not handsome. But if I were ugly, ugly as the Saracen's Eid, ugly as that beast Bulkley, I know it would be all the same to Mary. She has never forgot the boy she loved, that brought bird's nests for her, and spent his halfpenny on cherries, and bought a fairing with his first half-crown a brooch it was, I remember, of 2 billing doves a-hopping on one twig, and brought it home for little yellow-haired, blue-eyed, red-cheeked Mary. Lord, Lord. I don't like to think how I've kissed 'em, the pretty cheeks. They've got quite pale now with crying, and as he has never once reproached me, not once, the trump, the little TR rump. Is it my fault,
stamping,
that fate has separated us? Why did my young master take me up to Oxford, and give me the run of his library, and the society of the best scouts in the university? Why did he take me abroad? Why have I been to Italy, France, Germany with him, their manners noted and their realms surveyed? By jingo! I've improved myself, and Mary has remained as he was. I try a conversation, and she can't respond. She's never got a word of poetry beyond what Sims, and if I talk of Byron or Moore to her, I'm blessed if she knows anything more about them than the cook, who is as ignorant as a pig, or that beast Bulkley, Lady Kick's footman. Above all, why did I see the woman upon whom my wretched heart is fixed forever, and who carries away my soul with her prostrate, I say, prostrate, through the mud at the skirts of her gown? Enslaver, why did I ever come near you? Oh, Enchantress Calypso, how you have got hold of me! It was fate. When Mrs. Milliken fell ill of scarlet fever at Naples, Milliken was away at Petersburg, Russia, looking after his property. Her foreign woman fled. Me and the governess remained, and nursed her and the children. We nursed the little ones out of the fever. We buried their mother. We brought the children home over Alp and Apennin. I nursed them all three. I tended them all three, the orphans, and the lovely goo-goo governess. At Rome, where she took ill, I waited on her. As we went to Florence, had we been attacked by 20,000 brigands, this little arm had courage for them all. And if I loved thee, Julia, was I wrong? And if I be asked in thy beauty day and night, Julia, am I not a man? And if, before this Peri, this enchantress, this gazelle, I forgot poor little Mary Barlow, how could I help it? I say, how the deuce could I help it? Enter Lady Kickleberry, Bulkley following with parcels and a spaniel. Lady K. Are the children and the governess come home? John. Yes, my lady, in a perfectly altered tone. Lady K. Bulkley, take those parcels to my sitting room. John. Get up, old stupid. Push along, old dad along, looks aside to Bulkley. Lady K. Does anyone dine here today, Howell? John. Captain Touchett, my lady. Lady K. is always dining here. John. My master's oldest friend. Lady K. Don't tell me. He comes from his club. He smells of smoke. He is a low, vulgar person. Send Pinhorn up to me when you go downstairs. Exit Lady K. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.